Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation, on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name, the echo is haunting, the echo is always the same. I call your name, the echo is haunting, an echo can never be changed. So I call your name, your name.
And welcome to the gathering on Signs of Life Radio. Actually, we're pre-recording tonight's show on Halloween, and we're going to air it, tomorrow. And Tom and Melissa are here as our esteemed panel, along with Fran, and I'm Bob. Tonight's topic is facing death. Maybe is that a good topic for Halloween?
I think it's perfect.
Yeah, and when we say facing death, it's in broad terms from the perspective of the person that's dying, from the perspective of the loved ones that are around, from the medical profession and the caregivers. So there's a lot to get into. But before we get into the meat and potatoes, Fran, as you do always, keep us up to date on what's going on.
Hey, okay. Just a reminder of our listeners, this show is sponsored by Starseed Gems. They can be found on the web at starseedgems.com, and they are also the proud sponsors of Forever Family Foundation's November Mediumship Convention, Mediums Behind the Scenes. And we also want to remind our listeners to always check the events page on our website, foreverfamilyfoundation.org, for the latest events and happenings. Coming up free this month in November, on November 10th, we have the Visionary Explorers Group. They're an online afterlife discussion group. They meet from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern, and that would be 11 to noon Pacific, and everything else you want to calculate in between. Also on November 10th, from 1 to 3 p.m. Eastern time only, the afterlife discussion group from West Dade Regional Library in Miami, Florida, will meet also on November 10th. You can now reserve your spot at our annual Winter Grief Retreat in warm and sunny Fort Myers, Florida, coming up January 4th through 6th, 2019, at the super early bird rates that will end on November 4th. That's in a few days. These weekends fill up early, and super early bird rates are a special feature for our members to secure a spot at the low cost to attend. Details and registration links are on our website. Do not miss out. Our biennial medium convention weekend in Fort Myers, Florida starts next week. So pack your bags and join us for an unbelievable experience November 9th through 11th with our certified mediums behind the scenes. The event features frequent spirit communication, small teaching workshops, and group presentations, all designed to facilitate connections, foster your own communications with spirit, and learn about what happens after death. There's a lot of fun stuff planned for the weekend, and our pay one price includes both Friday and Saturday night banquets, complete with entertainment and spirit communication, not to mention our unique psychic goodie bags. And following November comes December with two noted events. On December 15th is our Holidays Past Long Island, New York event, a night of spirit communication with Forever Family Foundation certified mediums Gina Simone and Lynn LeClaire. And on December 23rd, we will draw five winners who will each win a reading with a Forever Family Foundation certified medium in our annual Holidays Past raffle. It's only $5 to enter. And please, please, please help us keep all of our programs going by visiting our website and clicking on the donation button. It's on every single page. Because of the work we do not receive the grants and funding that all other traditional not-for-profits enjoy. You can also help us pay our bills by participating in iGive.com, Amazon.com, great not-for-profits, and Amazon Smile, which is running a special of a 5% donation on all of your purchases that you make if you end enter Amazon through their Amazon.smile link, and of course name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice, and that offer ends on November 2nd. Back to you, Bob.
Okay, and our topic, as I mentioned, is facing death, and how we decided upon this topic is we thought it's interesting from talking to somebody, so many people, and also from our personal experiences just among the four of us, that sometimes you suffer the loss of a loved one, and when that happens, you have various beliefs. Some of us may have believed in an afterlife. Some of us may not have. And then as time passes, if you suffer the loss of another family member and your beliefs change, how does that affect the grieving process? You know, and I know, for instance, I mean, Tom, I know you've talked about personal stuff before, so I'm just going to, you know, ask you about it. You know, I don't think you'd be offended.
No.
But I know when your dad passed, for example, I think you were a bit more spiritually evolved than many of us may have been. I know after your dad's passed, you went on your own journey of researching what happens, and years later, your mom passed. So was there, can you talk about the difference, you know, in the two passings? Was there? I don't want to make the assumption that there was, but...
Well, as you mentioned, I had already been going down the road of trying to find out much more about spirituality and that. So I was in a place where, when my dad passed, that I was able to accept it, and even the very day he passed, we got signs right away. So I knew that it was a good thing. I mean, clearly, when I say it was a good thing, I meant that there were months leading up to it where he just wasn't himself, and then, of course, he had a stroke in the hospital where he was never going to be even able to speak again or move. So we had a good week to accept the fact that we had lost him physically. But like I said, he right away was... sending messages. I mean, even before he passed, when he was in the hospital in New York City, and they decided to take him to a hospice in Port Jefferson, and our home was in between on the route, and right about the time when he would have been transported on the expressway past our house, my car alarm went off in the driveway with nobody around it, so we felt that was him coming, saying hello or goodbye on the way, and then there was just a whole series of events on the day that he passed, including the phone being off the hook in his office that nobody'd been in weeks. As you mentioned, I have told the story, but we gave instructions to the hospice to call our phone and not my mother's phone, because we wanted to get any news so that we could break it to my mom. And we were trying to call my mom that morning, and hours on the of busy signal.
Back when phones had busy signal.
Yes, yes. There was no answering device, and it was just ringing off the hook. And then, you know, I got a call from my mother that she had just gotten word from the hospice that he had passed. So she told me later that she was wondering why she couldn't get a dial tone, and then she went up to the office and found the phone off the hook, which was pretty strange. And then, of course, when she put her on the hook, the very next call was from the hospice calling her. So I felt that my dad was trying to protect her from that phone call, knowing that they were calling the wrong number.
Right. And then, and so when your mother passed,
years later, you had already experienced communication, you know, from your dad, and you were pretty much, you know, I don't want to put the term in, like, knew what to expect, but you were kind of looking for certain things that maybe you weren't even aware to look for, you know, early in there.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, when you're approaching this subject, certainly from my mother's point of view, who was raised with a religious background in that, and she, certainly when my father was alive, he didn't want to hear anything about any of this that we're talking about. And my mom was kind of in that same boat. But after my dad passed, she, you know, she lost all interest in anything life-related. And it was, could have been a good year that she spent that way. And then we took her to a night of mediums where she got a medium reading, interestingly enough, from Lynn LeClaire, who's doing the winter holidays past. And the reading was so evidential that we left there, and she, the very next day, she had an entirely different outlook on life. She got back with her friends. She started doing things. She knew that, you know, my dad was still around and that one day they'd be connected again. And in fact, she was diagnosed towards the end of her life with leukemia and knew that she had just weeks to live. I don't know if she knew that necessarily. We knew that. The doctors told us. But it turned out that her birthday happened in that time frame. And for a birthday present, we had Laura Lynn Jackson come over. And Laura Lynn was telling my mom about how my dad was preparing a big party and practicing his dancing and that they were going to be reunited and dancing again. They love to dance. And, you know, and then about a week before she actually passed, you know, she was feeling down, and I reminded her of, remember what Laura Lynn said, that you're about to get reunited with Dad and on a new adventure. And she looked up at me and she said, you know, I feel kind of guilty, but I'm actually kind of looking forward to it. And I was just blown over at that point. I mean, there's a lot of things being involved with the Forever Family Foundation and the things I've seen and heard, but I never felt the value of what this organization does more than that day when I just was bowled away that I've never in my life heard anybody looking forward to the next step.
Well, that's right. And we're mainly talking about our interactions predominantly are with the remaining loved ones, not the deceased person, not the person that's dying. And it just shows you how your own belief system can affect the dying process. You know,
absolutely.
I mean, you know, I mean, it obviously helped your mom. There's a difference if you're, and we never know how we're going to react. I mean, I don't know. I mean, with all this stuff, if somebody told me tomorrow that I had a terminal disease and I had 6 months left to live, yeah, I can intellectualize about everything that I know.
Yeah,
but I don't know how I'm going to react, you know, with that news, but I think I'd be able to, at least similar to the grieving process, you could dig yourself out and point to all the things that you know and all the things that you've heard about and all the things that you've experienced and researched, and you can sort of, you know, pave the way for it. So we'll talk a lot back after the break more about that, but I'm really interested in instead of focusing on the relatives and the family, to focus on the mindset of the person, you know, that's dying, because I think that's really important. So when we come back, we'll have a lot more to talk about. Stay with us. Be back in a couple of minutes.
Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present, available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
The Camlack Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the Camlack Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlack.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
We all grieve in different ways, and let's face it, grief hurts. Losing a loved one is usually the hardest event we will ever face. We can throw our hands up and become hardened by our grief, or we can take positive steps to transform it. Love Knows No Death, a groundbreaking and powerful grief transformation method, can be what you've been looking for to provide some peace and understanding. It was created and written by medical doctor and professor Dr. Piero Calvi Perazzetti, and it's a combination of a self-help workbook and video course. The workbook has the power to lessen grief and foster significant healing, and has already helped countless people to not only lead productive lives, but to do so with the knowledge that they will indeed see their loved ones again. The workbook can be purchased for $19.95 on Amazon or on the ForeverFamilyFoundation.org grief and loss page, where a digital version is also available for $9.95. Love Knows No Death. Truer words have never been spoken.
After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world. But for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential. And research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The Sign Registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. Contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation.
And we're back on the gathering on Signs of Life Radio. We're talking about, you know, facing death. I was interested, and the reason I brought it up is that, you know, my mother passed a few weeks ago, and we never really discussed in detail the work that we did with my mom and dad. I mean, we would give them magazines, and she would show them to her friends, and she knew we had the radio show and that kind of stuff. I don't know. We never had any in-depth conversations about, you know, what happens, although we've talked about it.
I did many times with your father. I think he kind of blew me off each time, but
yeah, at least we mentioned it. But
like he could not explain to me after I told him that his brother Phil was going to visit, and then at 3 o'clock in the morning, the TV in the kitchen turned itself on to wake up the entire house, and then he still would not accept that that was Phil turning on the TV.
Wow.
Yeah. And he did say to us on the last visit, after my mother passed, he said, you know, I never told you guys this, but when I was in your house, you know, after Bailey passed, I was watching TV down in the den, and I felt her presence, you know, right next to me. He never said anything like that before, but now...
Now it's on his mind.
Yeah, but the point that I experienced, and the reason I was probing you this with Tom before, is that I came from a totally different perspective. You know, when my daughter passed, I didn't believe at all. I vehemently disagreed with the possibility. So, you know, and so it was just utter devastation with no hope. And I, if you would suggest to me that that she still survived, I would find that offensive, you know, because, but you're just talking foolishness, you know. Now, you know, fast forward 15 years, you know, going through it with my mom, totally different situation. This was a long, you know, term illness. And the first thing that came to mind is that I was angry, because I was angry at that she was suffering. You know, I couldn't, if this is not the way it's supposed to be, you know, if when your time comes, when the quality of life is gone, you know, when you're straddling two worlds, this notion of survival at all costs, you know, of the medical profession and instilled within us all, we have to fight. And from a physical perspective, it makes sense, but from a spiritual perspective, it makes no sense at all. So I was surprised, you know, I was in touch with my feelings, and that's the first thing that I noticed, that I was just angry that it shouldn't be this way. And I know that many, many of our listeners have similar, you know, stories watching, you know, loved ones pass. But, you know, as I tried to use what I had learned over the years, you know, with her, and she was, in the last couple of days, just semi-conscious, you know, you could startle her and she'd open her eyes and so forth. But 2 days before she passed, I'd said to her, it's okay, you know, it's okay to let go, you know, that, you know, we all love her and it's okay to let go. So then 2 days later, the whole family, Fran was there and I was there and my father was there and my brother was there. And that was the first time that we're all there at the same time by her bedside. I think that's what she was waiting for, because you know, we were all there. I said again to her, I whispered, I was actually taking my brother back to the airport, and I whispered to her, you know that we love you. She said, yes. I said, her eyes were closed, and I said, it's time to take flight. You know, leave this body behind and go fly. And then we took my brother to the airport, and then, you know, an hour later, she took flight. I think I mentioned to you, the interesting part about this is that my daughter Corey and my grandson Henry were in Virginia holding their own little private ceremony for Gigi Ma, as they called her, and then they didn't know that she passed. And at the same time that she passed, my grandson told my daughter that, hey, he said, Mommy, I looked out the window and I saw Gigi Ma flying on a rocket. That's
and
cool.
They didn't know
she passed, no. So, you know, that was,
and there's one more synchronicity to this, is that when we called your brother with the news, he was boarding the plane on his own flight. So I just think this whole thing kind of just all fit together at the same time.
So then as I reflect back upon it, you know, we've heard it a lot of times that people can choose when their passing is. Now, in this case, a few people mentioned to us, including Fran, that I think she's waiting, because we would see her often, but my brother didn't. I think she's waiting to see your brother, and we were all there at the same time, and that's when she let go. Mm-hmm. And also, we gave her permission, which sounds weird. Like, how do you give somebody permission to die? But from a spiritual perspective, it's different, you know.
I don't think it's that. I think it's what you brought up before. It's that we live in a culture where you must live at all costs. You must hang in there. You must do this. Mm-hmm. And I think people who have a deeper spiritual understanding of the quote-unquote circle of life understands that this is just nothing. This is just the experience. And when you are ready to go, you're ready to go. There's no reason to hang around. You've fulfilled your contract, your obligation, whatever it is that you came here for. You're done. You're ready to go on to the next adventure, you know. And there are, you know, ancient cultures that would celebrate the passing.
Yeah.
But in our culture, we won't talk about it. We won't look at it. We won't discuss it. We won't even go to some funerals sometimes because it's contrary to what I think deep inside of us we really, really know to be true.
Yeah, and so certainly I was better prepared. You know, I was watching for things, and it doesn't take away the pain. I mean, the physical pain of separation, physical separation is real.
Right.
Still, the tears still flow, even in those cultures that live by on the principle of communing with their ancestors, they still mourn and they still, you know, feel the separation.
But they celebrate at the same time.
They do, you know.
They celebrate at the same time. But I want to just kind of jump back to Tom and what he was talking about with his father, because I think this might, it's a little off topic, but I think it has something to do with the whole learning process. When your father was in the hospital ill and then he had the stroke, and the family seemed to accept at that point that this was approaching the end and it was time to prepare yourselves and get ready. Could he not also, his soul, who he was, been taking that time for himself as well? Because remember, he's now straddling both worlds, or he's already on the other side. The body is just hanging in here, and he's preparing all the wonderful things that he was able to do immediately. I mean, how many people have that wonderful experience of getting signs immediately and yet being aware of them as well?
Yeah. And, well, he was in for a surgery, putting a stent in, and we were told he had a heart attack on the table, which he survived. And then we came to visit, and he was talking about that, and then he started talking about that there was a tunnel, and my buddies were saying, come on, run, come. And then he said that he wanted to come back because he had a message to impart. And then it was a day later that he had this massive stroke. And my brother, who's a neurologist, they showed him the X-ray from this stroke, and we all knew then and there that, yeah, he was gone. He would never be himself ever again. And he had a living will, so we agreed to take life support off. And you know, of course, never having gone through this, I figured it was like in the movies, you'd pull the plug and that would be it. But of course, you know, his body still was living, and when he was lying there, and I was sitting with him, and I don't know if it was a doctor or somebody, said, well, you know, you can stay with him, but he won't hear you, or, you know, he won't know that you're here even, you know, kind of thing. And a couple of things I told him. One was, I told him, look, we'll take care of Mom. She's going to be good, fine. You know, you can, it's okay now. And he was a Navy man and a sailor. And I said, you know, so, you know, you can go and it'll be smooth sailing from here on in. And as soon as I said that, he twitched. And I thought, well, and then I was talking about him as something else. And I mentioned something that, you know, that was... near and dear, and he twitched again, and I'm thinking, it seems to me like he's hearing me. So I know from afterwards, from what we've found, that of course he was here, he heard me, but that his body responded at the same time was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And the hospice workers today all tell you that they hear everything.
Yeah.
They hear everything you say.
I know, you know, you tend to notice everything that's going on now. I mean, unlike the previous time, I mean, you're aware, since my mom was suffering, she would say things to my dad like, I want to die. And my father would always say what a lot of people would say is, he would say, I'm not ready for you, you know, to do that. And then a very caring hospice worker took him aside when, you know, and said, you know what, just want you to think about this, you know, maybe that's not the best, you know, thing to say to her, you know. And then something struck, and he realized, you know, maybe she's right, you know, and so he stopped doing that. But I just wanted to mention that we did notice, in sitting with her, she was reaching out, and she mentioned her mom. And also, which was, when you think about it, it is a little funny. There was an empty chair in front of her, and she was staring at that empty chair. And my father came over and sat down in the chair, and boy, was she pissed. Get up! You sit over there! You know, Fran and I knew why, but nobody else in the room did. But we knew,
Well, we had experienced exactly the same thing when my mother was crossing over, and he sat in the wrong
chair. That's right. So I know.
He made him get up.
And I got pissed, so I know, you know, because I didn't understand. You know, but now I do. There was also, and, you know, when I was telling her it was okay to take flight, and I said, you know that you're going to see people. And, you know, and she was, I didn't even think she could open her eyes anymore. And she opened her eyes and she repeated, see people? And I said, yeah. And I told her who she was going to see.
See
your parents, you're going to see your granddaughter, you're going to do whatever. And that, you know, that was like, at the very end. So all of these classic things that people tell us about, you know, it's different when you get to experience it, you know, on your own, but it was a whole learning experience. So
now, are there any specific signs afterwards that you can speak about?
I haven't received any.
I think that there was one synchronicity that took place where I was, and I forget which night afterwards, but I was doing my usual nighttime, preparing dinner, cutting, chopping, and everything. And we had prepared a lot of meals for her over the years. But I so thoroughly felt like she was standing next to me, watching me doing the cutting and the chopping and the this and the that and the that. And then Bob comes home that night, and I'm putting dinner on the table that I had been chopping and preparing. And he says that he had spoken to his father, who said that for the first time he decided he was going to chop things up and make dinner that night. And I'm saying, well, wouldn't that be interesting? Because it really didn't feel like she had remained with me during the whole preparation. Like, she just showed up while I was doing the chopping, but then she seemed to be someplace else. Where he was doing his chopping. So I think that was another synchronicity, where now all of a sudden the man who was not preparing dinner was suddenly preparing dinner, and she was watching over.
So Fran and I were talking about this, Melissa, the other day, about how you grew up in a household that was very open to the spiritual world, you know, and I think your mom believed in life after death, and now your mom is really getting up there. And how old is your mom?
95.
And you were mentioning that she sort of seems like she's losing
that belief,
which seems a little odd, don't you? Why do you think that is?
I don't know. Part of it might be, can that really be true? You know, like she would love to believe it. She's a very, Tom will tell you, she's a contrarian. So she'll sort of say the opposite of whatever you're saying, and she'll reverse it depending on who she's speaking to next. So I'm a believer, so she's telling me, doesn't believe so much. The home she lives in with my sister and her husband, my brother-in-law, is not a believer. Now, she might have a conversation with right. him, telling him just the opposite. Well, John, when I'm gone, I'm going to, you know, be right back here. So it's hard to say if she's really a non-believer. I suppose being that close to the other side can be a little, I have to say, frightening, just because, like Tom's father said to me in a reading, I'm not afraid to die, I just don't want it to hurt. And
it's like a Woody Allen thing.
Yeah. I'm afraid of dying, I just don't want to be there.
Right, right.
And I would think any of us would feel that way. You know, we just don't, because we probably imagine the act of death probably
and
being.
And I think that's because we've watched it in movies and on TV over and over and over again. But yet the evidence that comes back is that, you know, as Dave Kane says, no pain.
Right.
Well, what
no
about pain? Well, the suffering that Bob
Bob mentioned it earlier, and I have to chime in, too. It was this, I know that often several times I've talked about my mother's passing and how beautiful and peaceful it was. But the week before she passed and before she lost consciousness, it was hell. I mean, she was, some of the last words are, you know, oh, God, you know, why, you know.
Yeah.
And so, that did make us angry, too, because we didn't think it should be like that.
No.
We found out too late that she should have had a morphine drip and not just morphine, because we had to squirt morphine in her mouth, and she was spitting it out and that sort of thing. And she, well, I don't know if, yeah. I don't want to get too graphic.
No, but I think the basic thing is that as a society, we need more humane ways of helping people cross over.
Definitely. I mean, definitely.
We help our pets if our pets are suffering.
Well, we really don't know so much.
No, but when it seems that,
well, when you're eligible for hospice, your days are numbered, and if you start with her disease, her body was basically, you know, the inner organs were deteriorating, and she was feeling that, and come on, and you know, and then my brother is a doctor, and of course doctors, their thing is prolong life, and I'm saying, you know, how much morphine can I give her? And he goes, well, you know, you don't want to give too much. And I said, well, why? You know, what can happen? You know?
That was the same thing we had with Bob's mom. His cousin had come to visit, knowing that we were near the end, and she wanted some wine, so we broke open a bottle of wine, and she had a glass, and I had a glass, and Bob's mother looked at me and said, what are you drinking? And I said, wine. And she said, can I have some? And right away, cousin Hador says, no! And I'm looking at her like, what do you mean no? And of course Bob's mom says, what do you mean no?
Yeah. Why can't I?
Why can't I?
Well, you can't get alcohol and morphine. Well, why the hell not? You know, I'm like,
I gave it to her. And you know what? And that I think was the last time that I saw her actually consume food on her own. She held the glass with her hand.
She enjoyed.
She had more than one sip. She held it for a while. She took a few sips, and then somebody removed it from her hand. I think that they thought maybe she was going to drop it or something like that. But, you know, I think there's this crazy notion of things that you can't do.
Yeah.
And I think we have to get beyond that.
There are organizations out there that are striving for death with dignity, compassionate choices, and that sort of thing. So hopefully society will come back
quickly
around.
We're going to go to a break. We'll come back. We have more to talk about, so stay with us. Be back in a few.
Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
Am I Psychic is a mobile app designed using statistics, science, and parapsychological protocols to test psychic ability using fun games. Each game has two unique modes. In psychokinesis mode, influence the game using mind over matter ability. In extrasensory perception mode, guess which random option will be chosen. Am I Psychic can store your results in an anonymous database used to eventually publish in academic journals. Available on the App Store and Google Play. Go to ampsychicapp.com and be a part of proving psychic phenomena to the world. Some profits will be donated to the Rhine Research Center.
The Camlack Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the Camlack Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlack.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
We all grieve in different ways, and let's face it, grief hurts. Losing a loved one is usually the hardest event we will ever face. We can throw our hands up and become hardened by our grief, or we can take positive steps to transform it. Love Knows No Death, a groundbreaking and powerful grief transformation method, can be what you've been looking for to provide some peace and understanding. It was created and written by medical doctor and professor Dr. Piero Calvi Perazzetti, and it's a combination of a self-help workbook and video course. The workbook has the power to lessen grief and foster significant healing, and has already helped countless people to not only lead productive lives, but to do so with the knowledge that they will indeed see their loved ones again. The workbook can be purchased for $19.95 on Amazon or on the foreverfamilyfoundation.org grief and loss page, where a digital version is also available for $9.95. Love knows no death. Truer words have never been spoken.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation.
And welcome back to the gathering on Signs of Life Radio. So, Fran, you have a secret code there?
I do have a secret code for anybody who would like to save $75 attending the Mediumship Convention in Fort Myers, November 9th through 11th, Mediums Behind the Scenes. Just go online to foreverfamilyfoundation.org, click on the event page. You'll see the event there for November 9th. And when you fill out your registration form, type in the promo code GATHERING75, and you'll save $75 off the registration fee. So that's GATHERING75. And back to you, Bob.
Yeah, and we talked at the beginning of the show about we know from the evidence and from the hundreds and thousands of reports that we get that people who have lost loved ones are helped by the knowledge that their loved ones continue on in another form. It's helpful. But I think that the real service that we can provide is helping people with their own mortality. So when their time comes, they can face death with a sort of taking what Tom's mom said, you know. I mean, she's, imagine saying, I'm kind of excited about where I'm going, you know. And if you have that mindset that you're gonna see your husband, you're gonna see your loved ones, you're gonna shed, you know, this body that's been ravaged, you know, with physical ailments, and it's got to be of tremendous hope and comfort to somebody that's dying. I mean, listen, people, the nature of it, if you're dying by illness, I mean, you're going to be in physical pain. You need something, you know, I mean.
Well, how about this? I'm thinking of this. You're being, you know, reborn into this new life. When women are going through labor and the pain is excruciating, and yet, you know, you're going to be giving birth to a new life. You can't wait for that. But the pain is horrific. And yet, there are drugs to be given, you know, epidurals, things to block pain. And so you can go through the labor more joyously. So that goes back to why we can't help them. You know, why can't there be more drugs or something so that you can look forward to it, just like the new mommy having that baby. And
yeah,
the person leaving this world can look forward to their being reborn.
Well, there's one school of thought, certainly the mainstream scientists and medical doctors will say to you that, you know, these drugs will inhibit having, well, some professionals, they'll say that all these things are hallucinations that are brought on by the drugs. The ones that believe in the spiritual concepts will say that they're not, and that it's the opposite. The drugs inhibit having all of these non-physical experiences. So it's clear that you can have these experiences whether you're on drugs or not. You know, so. There's no clear-cut answer on that, but like I know your mom was getting morphine, my mom was also, but it's not the same, like you say, like a drip. It's an oral medication, and it doesn't. I don't think it's quite that effective. You know,
takes
whatever.
The edge off, right. As the doctors say.
I think it's really the mindset that we have to, you know, that we all have to focus on. You know, that people talk about preparing. Preparing for death, that we'll have a better death if we can prepare for it while we're alive. This is one of the ways that we can prepare for it by learning and experiencing and being open to the fact that it's not the end. I mean,
right, us, for our families too, because they're the ones that are going to be there,
right?
Yeah,
making the decision for you. So if you haven't had the conversation with them about what you believe and what you want to transpire, they're going to still fall back on the classic cultural responses to death.
That's a good point. And also, yeah, like what your father said to your mother, Bob, they're going to say those kinds of things.
Right.
And they probably think that they're saying it because the person wants to
hear
that. Like, you know, I can't go on without you. It's like, oh, you know, a mom doesn't want their child to suffer, their spouse to suffer. So that's a very good point, Fran, to educate the loved ones.
Right.
Yeah. I wonder how we would change, you know, as a society. I mean, how would this knowledge, you know, change us all? How would it change the medical profession? You know, what effect would it have on all these phobias and anxieties, death anxieties, you know, fear? It really could be powerful in that respect, you know. I mean, it might put a lot of psychiatrists out of business, you know.
Yeah. I think you're seeing it creep into the medical profession. I think there's a not a whole lot, but there's a good amount of good journaled research that's being done on death and dying. And if that were not true, you wouldn't see the hospice workers who are not medical people coming back and saying, no, this is the way it is. You know, they can hear you. We can make them comfortable. No, they don't have to suffer. Yes, they're going to a better place. This all comes from not just the hospice workers observing, but the doctors that who are on the scene who are now seeing things other than what they learned in medical school.
Yeah, I think across the board we're seeing more awareness. One example is at work, and then they send you to professional development and management courses and administrative demonstrations, and the word mindfulness is being used as, and I was blown away that what corporate thinking is now a little more aware.
Yeah,
needs to get a lot more aware. But
what do you think about the concept of for the terminally ill, this assisted suicide? I mean,
yeah, I'm all for it.
I mean, it's obviously it's a serious subject, and it's something that has to be taken, the cases have to be evaluated. I mean, you have to, it's not just somebody that just wants out of this physical world.
No, it's the same criteria for whether you're eligible for hospice.
Yeah.
You have to have a terminal disease.
Right.
Okay, if I'm terminal, let's end it now.
Right.
And not, if my mother, if I could have done anything short of, stopping her life myself to put her out of that pain, that would have been the time for it.
Yeah.
And there are states, I mean, Montana, or is it Oregon, one of the states there, it's legal and there's medically...
It would have been time, like, in that last week, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And the same thing with my mom in that last week. It's not, I mean, having a terminal illness, I mean, I know in my mother's case, she still had a pretty good quality of life with that terminal illness for a long, up until a couple of weeks, before the end. But in that, I found myself in that, last week, hoping I could take some of that medication and let her go,
The other thing that occurs to me is that, our physiological bodies are made up of different kinds of hormones that react to different things. And when we have pain, there are hormones that kick in that will try and remedy the situation. So by allowing somebody to suffer in pain, I wonder if there are actual statistics on people who are not on a drip as a terminal patient versus somebody who's doing home hospice who's not entitled to a drip, okay? Does it take them longer? I'm sure it does, to cross over than somebody whose body is now relaxed on a drip, able to go through the whole cycle.
Yeah. Well, it's a serious subject.
And it affects all of us.
I mean, who can go through life without facing a death?
Nobody. Yet.
Nobody.
Sooner or later.
Who doesn't pay taxes, right?
I know one person, by the way.
Okay, on that note,
we now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind as we visualize the healing light upon Robin Murray, Donna Mello, Glenna Irwin, Diane Archangel, Fred Folger, Eddie Coons. Now let us, as one consciousness, give our energy of loving thought by praying like this. to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.